This morning, we're going to be discussing the last of the Chaturshloki verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Text number 36 from chapter 9 of the second canto. Just chant the sloka first. It's an easy one. You don't have a book in front of you, but just listen and I'm sure you'll do great. Etavat eva jigyasyam.
Etavat eva jigyasyam.
Tatva jigyasanatmanah.
Tatva jigyasanatmanah.
Anvaya vyatirekabhyam.
Anvaya vyatirekabhyam.
Yatsyat sarvatra sarvada.
Yatsyat sarvatra sarvada.
You guys are great, even without a book. Fantastic. One more time. Etavat eva jigyasyam.
Etavat eva jigyasam.
Tatva jigyasanatmanah.
Tatva jigyasanatmanah.
Anvaya vyatirekabhyam.
Anvaya vyatirekabhyam.
Yat syat sarvatra sarvada.
Yat syat sarvatra sarvada.
The word for word.
Etavat. Etavat.
Up to this.
Up to this.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Jigyasyam.
Jigyasyam.
Is to be inquired.
Is to be inquired.
Tatva.
Tatva.
The absolute truth.
The absolute truth.
Jigyasuna.
Jigyasuna.
By the student.
By the student.
Atmanah.
Atmanah.
Of the self.
Of the self.
Anvaya.
Anvaya.
Directly.
Directly.
Vyatirekabhyam.
Vyatirekabhyam.
Indirectly.
Indirectly.
Yet.
Yet.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Syat.
Syat.
It may be.
It may be.
Sarvatra.
Sarvatra.
In all space and time.
In all space and time.
Sarvada.
Sarvada.
In all circumstances.
In all circumstances.
Translation. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this. Up to this. Etavat. In all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. Just before coming here to Detroit, I was in St. Louis, and we discussed this verse for 4 days in a row, because the purport is 13 and a half pages long. And this is part five, the conclusion. So you get the benefit. I'll just say in a summary way, all those other days. Read the last part. I'm going to read the last part of, that's like 2.5 pages or 2 pages of the purport, Prabhupada's purport, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a portion of his commentary, just to kind of like tie it all up, put a nice ribbon and bow and spray some perfume on it. So, the scene for the presentation of the Chaturshloki verses is just before creation. This scene is described again in the third canto, but it's before creation means Brahma has just been born. In the third canto, it's the beginning of a day of Brahma, so it's not exactly the same, but similar. And Brahma is searching for his identity and his origin and his duty and all those important things of life. He has gone down the stem of the lotus. He heard tapa, tapa, tapa. He's gone back to the lotus. Long, 1,000 celestial years, that's a long time, of tapa, and then suddenly the Lord appears before him in this sea of darkness, because there isn't anything, there isn't any light, there's no sun, there's no moon, there's nothing, it's just darkness inside the shell of the universe. And then Lord Brahma comes before the personality of Godhead. He enters into that, the language is yogpith, the central portion of the residing place of the Supreme Lord. And he's surrounded by so many personalities who are glorifying him in choice prayers. And as he approaches the Lord stands and he walks towards Brahma, extends his hand and shakes his hand, because they have this particular Brahma mentioned here has a relationship of friendship, sakya. And so, hey, where have you been? Good to see you. So Brahma offers some prayers. The Lord says, take a benediction. He's very clever. He asks for more than one. He asks for some questions to be answered so that he can perform his duty properly. And he asks for protection from false ego in thinking, I'm the creator. I'm but a servant. Please protect me from that maya of thinking that I'm the creator. So he asks certain questions. And that's the first word is up to this. Etavat. Etavat, Prabhupada's translation, is up to this. So this is a pronoun. This is referring to something. And it's referring to verse 30, which is before the answers are given as part of the questions. Sarahasyam tad angam cha. Sarahasyam. And in the purport of that verse, Prabhupada, about 12 times, uses the word mystery. This mystery, sarahasyam. And then he discloses what that spiritual life is, to discern or have disclosed to one that mystery. And the mystery is the most confidential knowledge, same as Bhagavad Gita. Relationship in devotional service to the Supreme. And sarahasya in its mature stage means love, prema. The stage of prema through the medium of devotional service. So, up to this, up to love of God, or up to the stage of yoga practice where one enters into loving service, bhakti. So, prema bhakti or bhakti. The way that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur translates the verse is, the person desiring to know the best sadhana and the goal of that sadhana, which is sadhya, must learn by jigyasyam, surrender to guru about this truth, which is determined as the best. So I'm giving you a capsule, so you know the capsule has been expanded in the previous four, but I'm just giving you the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, three places he is referred to text 30, where specifically Lord Brahma has said, please explain this to me very carefully. Bhagavat Shikshitam Aham Karavani Hyandrataha. He's taking that phrase to mean, excuse me, that's text 29. The process of understanding is not ascending, it's descending, in short. Please explain this to me. Exactly as Krishna says in the first verse of chapter 7, first verse of chapter 9, Tat Shrinu. hear from me. I'm now going to explain. It's saying the same. I am going to explain. Hear from me. It's descending. And one has to, so disciplic succession says, one has to receive from Krishna, or one who has received from Krishna, or one who has received from one who has received from Krishna, or one who is in disciplic succession from Krishna. Otherwise, it's sarahasyam, it's a mystery. Then there's a key that opens the mystery, and that's this disciplic succession. It's like having a treasure map. You're not exactly sure what the treasure is, and you can't exactly figure out what the map says, but you know there's a treasure somewhere, and you know you've got a map, just have to figure it out. And the solution is, you hear from one who knows what the map, how to read the map, and what the treasure is. Similar to what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described to Sanatana Goswami about the treasure. And it's on, you know, there's four sides, north side, east side, west side, and southern side. And beware on the northern side, southern side, western side. Go to the eastern side. And there you find the treasure. So there are different processes by which one might try to reach the Absolute. That's jigyasunatmanaha. The goal is atmanaha. And tattva atmanaha, the truth of the self. The absolute truth. Search those who are in search for the absolute truth should search for it up to this devotional service, topmost rung of the yoga ladder, and in the mature stage, rasa, and the mature stage, bhakti, prema bhakti, up to this. And then the other terms are anvaya and vyatireka bhyam, directly and indirectly. And in Prabhupada's purport, as well as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there's several directly and indirectly readings. One directly is through the nine processes of bhakti, and the indirectly is everything else that we do in our lives, when we're not reading, chanting, worshipping, or carrying out our duties, tadangam, along with paraphernalia. We're cooking, or working, or driving, or something. You're using that which is from Krishna in Krishna's service. So indirectly, one should be searching and inquisitive and in contact with the Supreme through this wonderful and mysterious process of bhakti. Another meaning of the directly and indirectly, the one that Vishwanath prefers, and Prabhupada also brings it in his 13 and a half page purport, is when you practice bhakti, here's the positive results. When bhakti is absent, here's what's missing, directly and indirectly. If you don't practice, you can do other things so expertly, but if bhakti is missing, it's flat. It fails. It's useless. And so many verses described like that. So, evidence of the best of sadhanas, that bhakti is the best of sadhanas, is described in those terms. What bhakti can produce alone, and the others can produce what bhakti produces, even perfectly performed. So, that's a little summary. I'm going to read starting page 565. It's like 2.5 pages back into the end of the, from the end of the purport, where what Prabhupada is doing is he's further delineating the sarvatra and then sarvada. Sarvatra, all places and time, all space and time. Nice Einstein time-space continuum concept. Sarvatra, and then sarvada, in all circumstances. The message here is, bhakti should be applied, and bhakti is appropriate to be applied in all times, all spaces, and then all circumstances. So very quickly, Prabhupada doesn't, he makes a long list, but he doesn't expand within that list so long. He starts off by saying, even at the time of devastation, this is as far as all times, even at the time of a devastation, bhakti is appropriate. Even during the annihilation of the material world, the process of bhakti can be applied. He quotes, Kalena nashta pralaye vaniyam, : the Lord is worshipped in devastation because he protects the Vedas from being annihilated. Matsya avatar and different forms of the Lord protect the Vedas at the time of cosmic annihilation. So he is, devotion unto him is appropriate even at devastation. Then next in his list is during all yugas, not just one yuga or another yuga, but all yugas. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.52, you heard this verse before, Krite yadhyayato Vishnum, in Krita Yuga or Sati Yuga meditation, Tretayam Yajato Makai, deity worship, Makai, sacrifice, performance of Yajna, Dvapare Paricharyanam, Paricharyayam, in deity worship during Dwarpa Yuga, Kalo Tad Hari Kirtanat. So at all yugas, at the time of devastation, at every moment, is the next one. Quote from Vishnu Purana, gives the Sanskrit, quote, if even for a moment remembrance of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of God, it is missed. That is the greatest loss. That is the greatest illusion. And that is the greatest anomaly. So at every moment, it's appropriate. Then next is at all stages of life, it's appropriate. Doesn't give quotes, but he refers when Prahlad Maharaj was in the womb of his mother, and Maharaj Prikshit was within the womb of his mother. It's appropriate. Worship the personality of Godhead. In childhood, at the age of only 5 years, Dhruva Maharaj worshipped the Lord. In youth, Maharaj Ambarish worshipped the Lord. Even at the last stage of his frustration at old age, Maharaj Dhritarashtra worshipped the Lord. Ajamila worshipped the Lord even at the point of death. And Chitraketu worshipped the Lord even in heaven and in hell. When Chitraketu was ascended to the heavenly region, still as Chitraketu, and he went to visit Lord Shiva, he was cursed even in hell. Then in the Nrisimha Purana, it is said that when the hellish inhabitants began to chant the holy name of the Lord, they began to be elevated from hell towards heaven. Gives the verse. Dhruva Maharaj, Durvas Muni, had also supported this view. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, the inhabitants of hell became released from their hellish persecution. So then, Sarvada, in all circumstances, he quotes Canto 2, the same canto, Chapter 1. Etan nirvidyamananam. Famous verse. Ichitam akrito bhayam. Yoginam nripanir nitam harir namanukirtanam. Shukadeva Goswami, one of the very first words that he speaks in the whole of the Bhagavatam, this is this first chapter of Canto 2, says, O King, it is finally decided that everyone, namely, those in the renounced order of life, the mystics, and the enjoyers of fruitive work, should chant the holy name of the Lord fearlessly, akuto bhayam, to achieve the desired success in their pursuits. Then, we just finished a page and a half. We have a page and a half to go. So, sarvatra sarvada, all time, all space, all circumstances, now comes indirectly. And this is following Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, where indirectly is indicating if you don't apply bhakti, here's the outcome. Here's what happens. So you can understand the thing by its symptoms and the absence of things by symptoms. So it's a list of 6 references. 1. Similarly, as indicated indirectly in various places in the revealed scriptures, 1. Even though one is well versed in all the Vedas and scriptures, if one is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, he is considered to be the lowest of mankind. 2. In the Garuda Purana, Brihadnaradiya Purana, and Padma Purana, there's a shared verse, and they all say the same thing. What is the use of Vedic knowledge and penances, Vedic recommended procedures, if one is devoid of devotional service to the Supreme Lord? Useless. It's harsh sounding, but useless. What's the purpose of those things? If the purpose is not achieved, what's the use? So it's the is to be appreciated indirectly. Number three, what is the comparison of thousands of Prajapatis to one devotee of the Lord? Doesn't give the reference. Prabhupada's making it easy for his reader. Shukadeva Goswami says in Canto 2, Chapter 4, that neither the ascetic, nor one who is greatly munificent, nor one who is famous, nor the great philosopher, nor the great occultist, nor anyone else can achieve the desired result without devotional service, being engaged in service of the Lord. Five, even if a place is more glorious than heaven, if there is no glorification of the Lord of Vaikuntha or his pure devotee, it should at once be quitted. Leave the place. No devotional service, yuck. Maybe very elevated in worldly estimation. Six, the pure devotee refuses to accept all the five different types of liberation in order to be engaged in the service of the Lord. Verses that indicate that. Okay, so now we're the final conclusion. He says, therefore, is that the glories of the Lord must be always and everywhere proclaimed, sarvatra sarvada. Somebody sent to me, so I forwarded recently, Gopalacharya, a Prabhupada disciple who was in Prabhupada's association, and he was being appreciated for having distributed many books for some period of time. And then Prabhupada asked him, what do you say when you distribute the book? And the devotee was nervous when he said, Prabhupada, I say, do you know something about yoga and meditation? They're thinking I'm meaning the other kind, the Hatha Yoga kind. And they say yes, and I showed him the book. He said, Prabhupada was silent for 30 seconds and said, you should tell them that this book will bring a solution to all of life's problems. You know, speak the glories of the Lord in all circumstances. That was Prabhupada's recommendation. And by reading this book, you'll understand how to achieve that. What the problems of life are and how to solve them. One should hear about his glories, one should chant about his glories, and one should remember his glories, because this is the highest perfectional stage of life. So, again, Prabhupada is turning to Vishwanath's rendering that from Lord Brahma's questions, what's the best of all sadhanas? This is the best of all sadhanas, and at the same time the best of all sadhyas, the fruit of sadhana. As far as fruitives, then he lists the fruitive worker, the empiricist, different types of people think that they want to attain. I'm not going to read it, I'm just going to summarize it. The language is beautiful, but for time's sake. They want something, and then this person wants something, and that person wants something. The fulfillment of all of those somethings in one something is through bhakti. So it's the best of all sadhanas. You can't say that about the other sadhanas. Even if these other processes are adopted, there is every chance of discrepancies in discharging the particular types of functions. By adoption of the transcendental emotional service, it has no limit, nor is there fear of falling down. The process automatically reaches the final stage by the grace of the Lord. In the preliminary stage of devotional service, there is an apparent requisite for knowledge. But in the higher state, there is no necessity of such knowledge. The best and guaranteed path for progress, therefore, is engagement in bhakti yoga, pure devotional service. And it appears that knowledge is a prerequisite, but he's already explained it's not. Anybody, a child, someone that doesn't even understand the language. And then he's quoted the verse, Abhira, Munanda, Palanda, Purkrasha, persons that have no qualification, they can engage in devotional service. So there isn't a prerequisite of something, knowledge or any something else. Certain condition, everything must be pure, then you can engage. Pavitra apavitrova sarva samgatopiva. In all circumstances of life, devotional service is appropriate and will serve to elevate, just like described even in hell. Chant and the persons can be elevated from hell. Next to the last paragraph, this is now, the emphasis is on descending knowledge. That bhakti is to be received in that manner. Necessity of disciplic succession. The cream of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the foregoing four Chaturshloki verses is sometimes squeezed out. The cream is sometimes squeezed out by the impersonalist for different interpretations in their favor. But it should be carefully noted that the four shlokas were first described by the personality of Godhead himself, and thus the impersonalist has no scope to enter into them because he has no conception of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, the impersonalist may squeeze out any interpretations from them, but such interpretations will never be accepted by those who are taught in disciplic succession from Brahma, as will be cleared up in the following verses. Necessity of disciplic succession. As Brahma was saying to the Supreme Lord, please explain this to me. And he's the most learned, so what to speak of any one of us. His body is made of intelligence. Compare. Sharira avidya. Besides that, the Shruti confirms that the Supreme Truth, Absolute Personality of Godhead never reveals himself to anyone who is falsely proud of his academic knowledge. And he quotes Katha Upanishad. I want to just from here go over to Vishwanath's commentary, because he also quotes the same verse, Katha Upanishad. In the Katha Upanishad verse, the focus is attaining Atma, as in this verse, atma tattva, knowledge of the self. So here's Vishwanath's translation of that Katha Upanishad verse. Atma is not attained by speaking, by intelligence, or by profuse hearing. Nayam atma pravachanena, pravachanena labhya. Not by volumes of speaking. Na medhaya, nor by intelligence. Bahuna shrutena, or lots of study. So how are you supposed to get atma tattva? Atma tattva, he reveals himself to the person who he chooses. Descending. So those who take this ascending process, sorry Charlie, you're not going to understand properly. The meaning indicating knowledge of atma is as follows. The person desiring to know the truth about atma should seek out atma which exists in all places, at all times, perceived directly in the universe, which is not different from its cause, the atma directly, and the atma different from the universe, vyatireka. So, here's the last sentence of this 13 and a half page purport. It's its own paragraph. The whole matter is explained by the Lord himself, and one who has no approach to the Lord in his personal feature can rarely understand the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam without being taught by the Bhagavatas in disciplic succession. This is a it's one of the nutshell verses, Chaturshloki verses, which means precisely this is what Shukadeva Goswami received from his father and from those Chaturshloki verses. Shukadeva Goswami expanded. His father further instructed him, but we read in the first canto when Shukadeva Goswami was first born, his father taught him the essence of the Bhagavatam. That's this, these four verses. And so from the essence, so many other verses that reverberate the same meaning. Bhakti is to be applied by us, or anyone who is in search of God, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. It's to be applied in all circumstances, in all places and times, directly and indirectly. Another way of saying that in reverse is that Bhagavad Dharma is not secular. As a new devotee, I joined the Hare Krishna movement in Boston, and at that time, even early in that early stage, Harvey Cox, does that name mean anything to some of you? Harvey Cox was a divinity, Harvard Divinity School professor, and although his field was Christianity, he somehow made a connection with the devotees very early on, and he very much appreciated the devotees and their devotion and what they were doing. And I, as a very new devotee, I was a visitor to his home in Cambridge, and he made the following comment. I didn't know this at the time, but he was the author of a book called The Secular City. And he was like, it was, he was analyzing, as a learned professor does, that Christianity has changed. Before it was also non-secular, now it's secular. The causes are, in part, government. Separation of church and state is what secular means. So taxpayers pay tax money. And schools are run by taxpayers' money, and so you can't have God in the schools because you have to have separation of church and state. That's secularism. And it's a product of frustration, or like the people being frustrated that the church leaders and the political leaders became buddies. And they, you know, they both became corrupt, one helping the other to maintain power, and just both becoming corrupted by that. So separate the two. That's secularism. And he was very unhappy, Harvey Cox, that Christianity has become like that. And he was appreciating that in your teachings, it's not like that. It's very clear in Bhagavad Gita. And it's very clear in the Bhagavatam. Sarvatra Sarvada. It's not, this is what you do for God and this is what you do for the state or your family or your job. It's not a secular teaching. It's God belongs in all places, in all circumstances. And so this is one of those foundational verses of the whole of the Bhagavatam, and therefore we're going to hear that same understanding of the other verses. They'll, in different ways, apply that essential understanding. Each of the four Chaturshloki verses are kind of standalone verses. That is to say, they don't say the same thing. They're different components. But at the same time, you put the four of them together, and it's the pillars that hold up the whole Bhagavatam. Just like this one word, etavat, up to this. What's that? Up to this. You know, impersonalists can go bananas talking about what up to this means. Brahman, of course, up to everything is one. Up to this. But that's not what it is referring to. It's referring to, you know, the mystery of devotional service. And devotional service is a mystery. The materialists don't get it, and the impersonalists don't get it. The speculators don't get it, and the yogis don't get it. It's a mystery. How are you to reach a position spiritual through material? You know, reason would say you can't. But it's a mystery. And the mystery is everything comes from the Supreme, so it has its spiritual quality. It's like at the very end, almost the very end of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Maharaj Pariksit has heard the whole 10th canto and everything before the 10th canto. And towards the end, he's heard all of Krishna's wonderful pastimes, very beautifully described by Shukadeva Goswami. So he's fixed in consciousness. He's feeling completely detached from the snake bird and the body and death. And his consciousness is fixed in Krishna. But then he expresses, chapter 87, Prayers by the Personified Vedas, he expresses this mystery in the form of a doubt. He says, wait a minute. how did this happen? How did we get here? Because all that's been going on is I'm using this ear, which is material, and you're using your tongue, which is material. How do we get to a spiritual place using material and material? Please explain. And Shukadeva Goswami says, this is such a good question. It was asked long ago when sages gathered and asked the same question. And when they discussed that question, it was such a good question. They said, oh, this was discussed long ago by the personified Vedas and the four Kumaras. And this is how the discussion went. And that is the longest chapter in the whole 10th canto. But the essence of it is this mystery. It's the mystery. One of the keys to the mystery is everything that exists comes from Krishna. So it has its innate spiritual quality. If used in relation to Krishna, the spiritual quality manifests. So the tongue can act in a spiritual way, the ear can act in a spiritual way, can get you to a spiritual place. If used properly. It's a mystery. Up to love of God. It's a mystery. It looks like material. To the mundane person, it looks material. And to the speculator, it's imagination. It's a mystery. But to the devotee, it's very clear. So the essential necessity of, as this concluding one sentence paragraph, through disciplic succession, under proper guidance. It's not like, you know, a control issue. It's a transcendental issue. It remains a mystery. And it's a natural way. Krishna doesn't want entering into his presence in the spiritual world persons that can't be respectful, duly respectful to his pure devotees. One who is duly respectful to his pure devotees, they can enter. One who is disrespectful, has disregard, they can't enter. It's built in. It's an invisible gate. They can't enter. No way. No cleverness can get them in. But when that please explain to me the respect for this descending mercy of the Supreme Lord as Brahma exhibited and those in Brahma's line must also carry, then the mystery can be unraveled. And here it's being unraveled. I previously spoken on the other three, so it's like, but they're also like this one. The purports aren't as long as this one, but the meanings are also very, very deep, profound, and wonderful to examine, especially through the assistance of Srila Prabhupada's wonderful purport. Okay. Any discussion? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. One thing that I was hearing from the class is the point about Jigyasa, how Lord Brahma started his journey. So he was searching for the absolute truth. And then there was also the description of accepting devotional service directly and indirectly. So one thing that I am understanding is like the underlying principle is Jigyasa. So one has to be inquisitive. And one of the things that I feel in my situation is like, so we were given devotional service by mercy of devotees. And somehow there is a sense that we are given answers before even the questions were asked. So, so we need to cultivate that jigyasa, that ongoing this thing to receive it. Because if that jigyasa is not there, it hinders the reception.
Yeah, it won't come in.
Yeah. So how do one cultivate that ongoing basis of like?
Well, association helps a lot. You associate with persons who have that spirit, and that helps a lot. Understanding the necessity helps a lot. And just the ongoing, let's say, like children, you know, what inquisitiveness and sense of necessity do they have? But just by hearing, they're benefiting. The same for us. But there's cleansing that's taking place, and as that cleansing takes place, the light comes on. And when the light comes on, then, hey, what's that? So that is to say, we're now equipped. We'll make a compare and contrast. Persons that are born in the West, and persons like most of you, except the kids here, born in India. From childhood, although you may not have known what this and that is, part of the culture is there's this and there's that. There's some, you know, the vestiges at least of Vedic culture are there. And that's a wonderful support. And in the West, it's the culture of no culture. So that's a deficit. I may not use the asset. I may be able to overcome the deficit. But there's an asset. You know, you can't force your children to do something, be nice devotees, but you can create the atmosphere. So our inquisitive spirit may be not so strong, but if the atmosphere is created, whatever capacity that's there, the potential can be more readily realized. Using the comparison of the first canto Bhagavatam, it's like having dry wood as opposed to wet wood. The chance of igniting dry wood is much better. So something inside, it doesn't get away from all of that that I just said, doesn't take away from the necessity of inquisitiveness. But it makes it easier for the inquisitiveness to go, you know, move forward, even whatever little bit is there. The tendency of conditioned souls is we don't like to suffer, so we start getting inquisitive when we're suffering. And when the suffering goes away, so does our inquisitiveness, where we get busy enjoying again. Because that's the tendency of conditioning. So that's another impetus, is suffering. How do we stay inquisitive? Suffer a lot. And that's learning the hard way. Better to learn the good and the easy way. Since that, yeah, I don't like to suffer. I like the other kind. I like, you know, less pain, please. So then, be inquisitive. Okay, Maharaj. I'll work on it. It's an impetus for inquisitiveness. Something else? Yes.
Maharaj, like you were saying that we should practice devotional service in all times, sarvatra sarvada. So what I find is that although I desire to be focused throughout the day on some service or sadhana, but it's difficult. Like I find that just the day goes by and there is no the satisfaction is not there that I was focused fully. So this sadness or frustration is there. So how can we?
That's common.
Focus.
I mean, the question itself is a common question. I remember one of the first times I heard it. Someone said, "You know, I get Krishna consciousness at home, and I want to apply it in the workplace. So I I'm at a 45 degree tilt and I skip down and sit down at my workstation and it's 5 o'clock and the whole day's gone. What happened? How do I apply in the workplace?" Common. So phrased differently, but there's many things to say, but I'll say three things. One is strong morning and evening sadhana will, over a period of time, revive dormant Krishna consciousness so that that spills over into the rest of the day, just naturally. Just naturally. Another is incrementalism. In the course of the day, schedule a little break where you look at Bhagavad Gita or you chant some lunch break, you chant some japa, or there's a verse that you're a series of verses you want to remember. So at intervals you take a little, recite the verse, bring the verse, assimilate, and then carry on. When I was a new devotee, one of the kirtan leaders on Harinam, remember, used to do this. His name was Alit Kumar. He had this big bag. Before devotees knew about bags, he had one. In his bag, he had a little Bhagavad Gita. It was those paper Bhagavad Gitas, the blue covered ones. And right in the middle of the kirtan, he'd open, reach in his bag and pull out his Bhagavad Gita and, you know, like, look at Bhagavad Gita and, you know, run his finger across the page and close his eyes and put it back in his bag and continue with kirtan. And I learned from that that his consciousness was fixed even when he was doing something else. Little intervals, it's a second, the incremental interval possibility. Another is far broader. And it's the taking the assistance of knowledge, that is to say, everything comes from Krishna. What exists that doesn't come from Krishna? There isn't something that doesn't come from Krishna. So the taste of water, or the modes of nature. Oh, there's an interesting manifestation of the mode of ignorance. There's one of mode of passion. It's just seeing things in relation to Krishna. Or the absence of thought of Krishna. That's something you can do just through knowledge. See through the eyes of scripture, jnana chakshusha or shastra chakshusha, and then that way you can see Krishna or think of Krishna. This is how Krishna sees, this is how, because of how Krishna describes. And then there's thought of Krishna. At different times of the day when that Krishna consciousness light comes on, or all the time. So that goes back to the first one. When sadhana is very strong, it over a period of time, it changes how you see things. You have a different frame of reference, a different paradigm, and life looks different. It's Krishna conscious different. Maybe the same, you know, stuff, but your experience is different. So then they're supplying that at the other periods of the day, besides when you're reading and chanting and praying and worshiping. Apply it. Those are some suggestions. Yes?
Manoj, one more thing is that like this tendency of so there are different priorities for different things, and my tendency is then to justify that, justify the low priority or be engaged in low priority things or which are very tangential and kind of wasting time in those, and then the high priority or the more important services get postponed. So how can that be?
Keep working on it. Keep working on it. It's a little bit like her question, you know, sense of inquisitiveness and urgency for inquisitiveness. The fact that you recognize you're doing that is progress, because everybody is doing that. They don't even know what the problems of life are or how to solve them. And this is la-di-da. So now you know. You have some sense of higher priorities, lesser priorities. So that's progress. You're recognizing you're wasting time in some cases, at least. There's a tendency. That's progress. And so keep going. Keep going, especially with the qualitative way in which you perform your direct devotional practice every day. There's the strength and the means of purification to get into the higher priority things. The quality with which you do those hearing and chanting activities, and the quality of the relationship or relationships that you have from those who you're hearing, or with those who you're hearing from. In other words, let the love principle carry you beyond what your own effort might be. Bhakti principle. Because there's relationships, and those relationships are very important, and they carry me beyond my own capacity, beyond my own shortcomings. And it's natural. It's not, it when restored, it's not intermittent, like mind is, if we accept it from the mind platform. Mind's flickering. Accepting, rejecting. Just like that. Boom, boom. Something that's more enduring is something that's endearing. Bhakti principle. And practice. Abhyasa yoga yoktena.
Maharaj, it takes faith to believe in bhakti and start applying it. So while sharing Krishna consciousness with others, I notice a point that generally people cannot even see what others are doing and take inspiration from that. And their systematic process given in this devotional service, each one of them can take us more and more high into the higher realms, but still there is no impetus to take it up. So how could they overcome that, and how can I in that position help them to like take it up?
You're a very analytical personality. Gotta hand it to you. Kind of lost you halfway through, and I think I got you at the end. The simple answer is purity is the force. The how-to is purity. Someone that's very simple and pure can be a very powerful person to move somebody that's stuck to unstuck. Maybe not also, because the person that's simple and pure may be viewed by the person as complex and stuck as, you know, I don't respect you because you're not complex like me. But at least the potency is there. Purity is the force. Two other thoughts. One is, it's hard to, won't you be cautious to not evaluate devotional service simply in terms of an immediate result, because it doesn't always work that way. It may, but it doesn't always work that way. So someone may be receiving spiritual benefit and it's not being measured or exhibited by some immediate movement. And so, our business is to serve. Our business is not to control and get results. Our business is to serve. So we serve sincerely to our capacity. And cumulatively, something is happening. Just like with children. One of the things that I heard from teachers is it takes a lot of the quality of goodness to be a teacher, because you don't see quick results, but the payoff is long term. And same, I'm sure, as parents. So you know, just consistent Krishna consciousness, and that's never going to be lost regardless of externals and what's being quickly or not quickly manifest. There's a third thing. Let me see if I can recall the third thing. Yeah, the second thing was you may not see immediate transformation. Don't worry about it. Continue to serve. And then the other is the results. That's up to Krishna. When Srila Prabhupada first came to New York, where were the results? There weren't. That was up to Krishna. And then all of a sudden there was a big explosion. It wasn't a different Srila Prabhupada. It was the same Srila Prabhupada, the first year and second year. But it's in Krishna's hand. So we strive sincerely by right means, and that's what we're to do. We should see that the service that we do is to our capacity very nice offering to Krishna, and that we do it consistently, not just one time and feel that's okay, that's it, it's done. I just got a report from the Gita camp. One of the Premananda's not there this year. She went with her family to India. So there's this camp. Now it's 79 registered students, and they have a second camp coming after that. And it started with two families. Actually, it started before that with just like family day, one day during the summer. And people said, oh, this is so nice, let's do more for our kids. So this is something that's done in a quality way over a period of time. It brings transformation. Quality and consistency, and results will come. Krishna's grace. So just stay clear in the service department. Make your heart pure. Make your effort as best as you have the capacity and understand, pleasing to Krishna. But just keep doing that. Krishna will do the results department very nicely. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.